Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Robert Hockett. Robert teaches financial and business law subjects at Cornell Law School, where his research and writing focus on the legal and institutional prerequisites to a just and prosperous economic order. He is also a fellow at the Century Foundation, a commissioned author for the New America Foundation, and consultant to a number of financial institutions, regulators, and legislators. Prior to entering legal academia, he worked at the International Monetary Fund and served as a judicial clerk for the Honorable Donnell Reese Tacha, Chief Judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Tenth Circuit. He was educated at the University of Kansas, Oxford University, where he studied as a Rhodes Scholar, and Yale University. Robert also authored a memorandum entitled It Takes a Village, Municipal Condemnation Proceedings and Public-Private Partnerships for Mortgage Loan Modification, Value Preservation, and Economic Recovery. And it's that memorandum that we'll be speaking with him today. Robert, welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks so much, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
Robert, you just talked about the appraisal issue and some of that being proprietary, which I can understand. The basic gist is that there's probably going to be a discount, of course, on the loan because it's over encumbered. But let's say that might be a lot harder to appraise. In appraisal, we think of, okay, here's a comparable sale. And that might be a little harder to come by on an existing note.
Sure,
the existing home would be pretty easy to appraise.
Sure.
And I just in general terms, do you feel that for the whole plan to work for the participants on the city side, let's say, that there has to be a loan purchased at less than the house's value? Would that be fair to say?
I don't think that's correct in this particular case. But again, in order to sort of give you a detailed answer as to why, I would have to give you more details at the valuation model than I should give right now.
Okay, fair enough.
So I guess what I'll have to do is ask you at least to trust me this much, to trust me in saying that, yes, we've considered all of that, and we are concerned about that, and we've tried to use a valuation methodology that avoids that kind of phenomenon. But I have to remain pretty much that vague for the time being with a plea for forgiveness.
Okay, no problem. You coined, it's hard to coin a new phrase after this has been going on for years, but you managed to do it, a shadow vacancy. I cracked up when I read that.
Oh, shadow vacancy, yeah.
Yeah, explain that concept to me because, you know, if it, in some cases, it certainly is valid.
It seems right. Yeah. So, you know, the basic idea here is that if, you know, insofar as there is a significant danger of actual delinquency, default, and foreclosure in respect of certain homes or certain neighborhoods, you've got a likelihood when people make decisions about what to do in the future, whether it be a matter of investing or making lendable funds available or assessing the value of property and then, you know, collecting property taxes on that or deciding whether to move into a neighborhood or not or deciding whether to leave a neighborhood or not. Decisions of that sort will be made partly, you know, almost as if the vacancies were already there, right? Almost in the way that, you know, you might say, okay, look, if you have a 50-50 chance of winning $200, you know, the expected value of that particular winning is $100, right? You discount the 200 by 50%. And in the same sense, right, you can say, okay, an actual vacancy is a vacancy with a 100% probability of occurring, right? It actually has occurred or it's certain. But insofar as vacancy becomes a possibility, you know, the higher the percentage probability of its occurring, the greater the degree, the closer it comes to being an actual vacancy. So this notion of a shadow vacancy is when I was sort of, I kind of coined, I guess, that term as a way of sort of taking account of the fact that we sometimes view the prospect of possible vacancies as being, you know, akin to actual vacancies, even if not quite as serious because not quite as certain. But, you know, the higher the likelihood, the closer to certainty you reach. And decision-making on the basis, then, of vacancy rates is also presumably going to be made at least partly on the basis of likely vacancy rates as well, and in that sense of shadow vacancy rates.
And one of your thoughts about a shadow vacancy, somebody that's current but upside down, is they'll be more hesitant to keep the property up.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one thing, right? I mean, the fuller your stake, right, the greater degree of your positive equity or your likelihood of having ultimately positive equity and indeed full equity in your house, the more of a sort of stakeholder mentality you develop relative to that property, and the better care you take of it, the more careful and attentive you are to it, and thus, of course, the more attentive you are, in effect, to your neighborhood and thus to your neighbors and to the values of their property. Is the basic idea there. And it just sort of connects up with this broader point, which is sort of covered at some length, I think, in Section 5 of the big memorandum, which is that, you know, we're always talking about more than just the creditors and the debtors here, right? Of course, we're talking about them, maybe first and foremost, but we're also talking about various third parties, and this is, of course, basically having to do with what economists often refer to as externalities, which can be positive or negative. And, you know, basically when you've got, you know, lots of vacant properties or prospectively vacant properties, those that are not vacant and not prospectively vacant typically take a value hit, too, as you were talking about in, you know, back in 2007, 2008 especially, and 2009, 2010. But, you know, those effects might not be as intense at the moment as they were some years back, but they're still relevant effects that you know, a county will take account of when determining what to do, if anything, about you know, a kind of an ongoing underwater mortgage loan problem.
Getting back to the specific type of loan that you'll be addressing if the plan is implemented, so yeah. they're current only and they're owner occupied only. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay,
but they have to be way underwater.
And what would be way underwater? Is that, and in San Bernardino, by the way, you won't have any trouble finding those.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So I believe that we are currently, I believe that the plan as San Bernardino is, I keep hedging in this particular way because ultimately it's San Bernardino's decision, and they're going to come up with their own variation on the basic template of the plan that has been presented to them as a you know, a possible way of going. But I believe that the current understanding is that it would be 10% or more underwater, might be 15% or more underwater, but again, you'd probably have to verify that. If anybody who wants the real number to make with any degree of certainty, you know, would want to check with San Bern, but I think it's 10, possibly 15 or more.
Okay, so I mean, honestly, that's the entire city that had a mortgage, and probably after 2002 and between then and 2008, I would think. I mean, that would just be such a big number.
Yeah.
What is there age of property that's being paid attention to, or all comers on that?
Not so far. So thus far, as far as I understand it, there's no particular, you know, sort of parsing on the basis of age of the property.
Okay. What's in it for the mortgage resolution partnership?
Right. So what mortgage resolution partners would receive is essentially a fee, essentially a market rate fee for the refinance operation in connection with the loans, right? So you get the acquired loans for which fair market value is paid, or I should say fair value is paid. You know, if there are market proxies, then it's fair market value. If there aren't fair market proxies, then it's valuated or valued pursuant to some other orthodox method. In any event, once that's done and those mortgage loans are acquired, they are extinguished and replaced by new refinance principal write-down mortgage loans that will leave the homeowners with an increment of positive equity, and essentially the refinance charges for that are what mortgage resolution partners recoups. And again, the emphasis here is on market rates. They're essentially charging what other refinancers charge when they do these sort of refinancings of mortgage loans when such things are permitted or possible.
Okay, now I need to just clarify. There seem to be two terms used. Let's just go through the mechanics of: I'm the owner-occupant, I'm over-encumbered, the city uses eminent domain, and my loan is purchased at some agreed-on number or some fair number by who?
It's purchased by the city, by the municipality.
The city then owns the loan.
The city then owns the loans temporarily.
Correct.
right? While it owns those loans, the refinancing is done. Essentially, the old loans are replaced by new loans with principal written down that are basically more sustainable loans.
Who's that lender?
The lender there, that's essentially is the, those. These are the private investors who put up money for purposes of paying the awards, right, to those from whom the mortgage loans are purchased, right? So basically money, of course, has to be spent in order to pay fair value for the existing mortgage loans. The cities, of course, don't have that kind of money, nor do the states, right? And that's one of the virtues of the plan as we see it, is no tax dollars are used, no public funds are used. The money that's used to pay fair value for those loans is money that's put up by investors.
Right. I'm talking about the creation of the new permanent loan for the occupant. What loan is that?
So the creation of the new loan will be done by the cities with the assistance of mortgage resolution partners who specialize in doing this, right, in essentially in refinancing mortgages.
And it's going to be an FHA or Fannie Mae or some such loan like that?
Basically, it's going to be sort of whatever happens out there in the private market, right? So some will be FHA qualifying. Others might not be. Presumably, most will be. But the idea is they're not going to be any different from any other mortgage loans out there as far as FHA coverage is concerned and FHA conformability is concerned. They'll basically be on all fours with other mortgage loans in that respect.
Let's say if the city buys a mortgage for $100,000 and a property appraises for 120, the occupant owner will be refiing at a basis of 120 or 100?
Yeah, it's, you know, again, I think it's probably better that that one be addressed by MRP and San Bernardino, just because they're handling, basically because that particular side of the operation is in flux, and they're working that out.
Is there an intent for there to be a profit margin on that for either the city or for mortgage resolution partnership?
No, there is no such intent.
Okay. That's all I needed to know.
Yeah, yeah. The intent there is simply for a flat fee that is essentially a market rate, a fee that is equivalent to what you find prevailing out there in the market for refinancings to be earned by MRP in connection with each refinance.
What's in it for the city then?
What's in it for the city is nothing financial is in it for the city other than two things, right? One is there's the avoidance, of course, of the cost that would otherwise be entailed to exercise eminent domain, right? All of that cost is footed, if that's a verb here, by the investors who put up the money that's used to pay fair value for the mortgage loans. And then, of course, the second thing that's in it for the city is addressing this looming or ongoing urban blight or quasi-urban blight problem and keeping, of course, residents in their homes or boosting the likelihood significantly that more rather than fewer people will stay in their homes. The idea then is also to stabilize property prices, real estate prices, so as to prevent any further declines in the property tax base and hence further declines in the city services that can be offered, services which are, of course, financed out of that property tax base, all of that. Basically, it's the flip side of the public purpose that is articulated in this connection, right, where we say insofar as San Bernardino has a public purpose to do this, the realization of that public purpose is what's in it for San Bernardino and for any other county, for that matter, in California or elsewhere who pursues this plan. And you probably already know that lots of other counties and lots of other states are looking at this, too, and have approached MRP and are working out arrangements to pursue their own versions of the plan. It may be worth also noting in that connection that every municipality will have its own version because every municipality has its own unique, set of property difficulties or other circumstances.
It is the fact that the market, your prices certainly are down from the peak, but they're up in Riverside, San Bernardino, something like 27% from the bottom, that inventory is down, that time on the market is down, foreclosures and so forth. It seems like the market's improving on its own. Does this make this a much more difficult proposition to sell than it would have been, let's say, in 08 when you first thought about it?
It might make it marginally more difficult, but I don't think it makes it much more difficult. And indeed, it might not make it more difficult at all for a couple of reasons. One is back in 2008, I think that there was still some skepticism There are sort of two things about 2008. One is there was still some skepticism as to whether this was going to turn out to be a really long-term ongoing debt deflation of the sort that it's turning out to be, right? In other words, there was still some skepticism in 2008 as to whether this was going to turn out to be a sort of a Japan-style indefinitely extended slump. There seems to be a little bit less skepticism about that now, mainly because we've been living with it for so long now, and it's still, you know, dragging along. A second difference between now and 2008 is that, of course, back in 2008, there was still some reason to suppose or to hope that federal instrumentalities might do something to kind of help, right? That the GSEs might help, that FHA might help, or that some other federal instrumentality might help, or that HAP might help, or that HARP might help. You know, and none of these programs, of course, have been helpful, but they haven't turned out to be spectacularly successful. And I think, you know, there's a lot of people now recognize that, whereas there was probably a bit more hope in 08 that such programs, even before they were promulgated, of course, might be, you know, on the cards and might work. In that respect, people might be a little bit more open now, even than in 2008, to the prospect of municipalities or states acting to take control of their own destinies and rather than waiting for the feds. When it comes to the matter of, well, but what about the market? How does the market compare now to then? It's true, of course, as you noted, that, you know, we are above previous lows, but that's to some extent, you know, sort of detracted from by the fact that, well, we've had a good bit of ups and downs, upping and downing, I guess you could say, since 2006. So, in other words, the mortgage markets have begun to show signs of coming back before, only to drop yet again. And until we get beyond the sort of two steps forward, possibly two steps or three steps back, possibly one step back, sort of jagged trend line that we've been living with over the last 4 or 5 years, I think people are going to continue to be concerned that, well, maybe this is just another one of those green shoots moments that turns out actually to be a dead letter where nothing comes of it. Right?
Well, what's interesting about the plan is it doesn't deal with anything that's imminently a problem. You're only dealing with things that are current, and probably 40% of the foreclosures are 2 years in process before they become an eviction or before they become a bank-owned property. So,
yeah.
I mean, talk about preemptive. It's preemptive by several years, whereas there's, and I'm not saying you should implement it at all, but I'm saying that it seems like the imminent problems will continue unabated and in great number in San Bernardino Riverside, less than was in 08, but it still seems like this plan is dealing with something that is assuming it's going to be a bigger problem than it probably would turn out to be, in my opinion.
Yeah, gotcha on that. So I guess I have sort of four quick responses, right? So the first is when it comes to already delinquent or already defaulted mortgage loans, there's nothing, of course, to preclude other solutions being pursued in respect of those mortgages. That's the first point. Second point is there's nothing to preclude some such plan as the present plans being adapted either now or in future to cover those kinds of mortgage loans too. It's just that it doesn't do that yet. Third point is then, well, why doesn't it do that yet? And that is, well, we've got sort of two reasons for that, right? Two reasons to begin with the particular mortgage loans that we do begin with. The first is something I alluded to before, and that is, you know, in order to avoid any danger of so-called moral hazard at this particular juncture, we start with these mortgage loans and we sort of, you know, reward people who are staying current, again, against the odds or notwithstanding the odds. And we avoid, you know, adding additional inducements to so-called strategic default. That's one reason to sort of at least begin in this way until, you know, nice fine-tuned moral hazard avoiding ways of dealing with already delinquent or imminently delinquent mortgages are developed. And then, you know, finally, the fourth point, which is really a sort of second point under the heading of, you know, why these, at least now, even if other solutions might be available for the other mortgages later, is it's worth remembering that we're using private investor funds in order to spare taxpayers, right, in order to spare any kind of public expense in this because, of course, budgets are strapped. And as you know, San Bern has now filed for bankruptcy or voted to file for bankruptcy. But so the question then becomes, all right, well, so you've got these private investors and what you're offering them is a novel new way of essentially addressing a market failure and possibly recouping value, but it's novel in the sense that it hasn't been done before for mortgage loans. And that means there's a fairly limited, at least at the outset, pool of investable funds, you know, forthcoming from the private sector, at least at the front end again.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to, you know, in order to lessen, to some degree at least, the risk that this won't work out or won't pan out, you deal first with the mortgage loans that are doing best, even though, again, the odds are stacked against them. And then if the plan works, as we believe that it will, and proves successful quite quickly and quite effectively in dealing with these particular mortgage loans, and indeed does recoup value that's currently lost by boosting the expected values of these particular loans that we're targeting, then presumably people will be a little bit more, will find it a bit more familiar, a little bit less surprising and unfamiliar, will be willing to invest more. And when that comes to pass, it would then be possible to kind of revisit the question of whether more mortgage loans ought to be looked at in some, you know, sort of next wave of such actions, maybe pursued by other municipalities, right, other than San Bernardino, or, you know, maybe additional exercises later. Having said that, I have to emphasize, first of all, that nobody is currently contemplating any such thing. It's just a prospect that I'm imagining as a possibility in my role as an academic who's been thinking about these sorts of things for about 4 or 5 years. And I also, you know, sort of hasten to add, in addition to that, that, you know, there is a kind of a ring fence around this particular exercise of the eminent domain authority. I mean, I know that some people out there are worried about sort of slippery slope problems, like, well, gosh, if you can use eminent domain to sort of take these, are you going to use it next to take our wives or our children or our, you know, our parents?
I think most people's concern is, I mean, we acknowledge that the eminent domain would be, you know, is legal. It's just, is it wise? And just like
is it
the point in Hawaii, it turned out to be legal and not very wise. And that's that's the biggest problem. We only have 3 minutes left. I do want to get on two other things. One of them is, where do the losses go? I mean, these lenders are, in essence, being forced to take a hit on loans that are current. They already have loans that are in foreclosure. They probably are expecting that. They probably not, I wouldn't think, were expecting losses on these if they were current. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, again, this is a really, really critical point, Bruce, is that our claim, and again, this is true only if and only if we choose the right mortgage loans, and we believe we are choosing the right ones, but our claim is that if and only if we choose the right mortgage loans, there is no loss. There is literally a recoupment of value, and the only real question is, how do you distribute that surplus?
But you're forcing the action at a market that's still way below even replacement value. And I guess that's my point, is that you're forcing the lender to take a refi at today's value when it looks like they won't have to do that. Even if people didn't make a payment for another 2 years, they would have a market value. And again, now this is conjecture, that would be higher than today's.
Right. And we, you know, again, we don't believe that there's any reason to suppose that those are going to be higher than today, as a sort of a more general point. And a more particular point is, again, the valuation model that we're using, and again, one can contest that model once it becomes part of the public domain and we're all sort of talking about the model itself. But what we're, the aim here, and I believe we've done it, is essentially to target precisely those mortgage loans which, were they portfolio loans, would already have been written down, but have not been written down solely and owing to the fact that they are securitized mortgage loans that are subject to PSAs, pooling and servicing agreements, that prevent those actually financially rational modifications or sales, right? And so if we have succeeded in targeting all and only those mortgage loans, then what we're doing is recouping value in the same way that portfolio loan holders recoup value when they voluntarily write down. So in that sense, we don't even think that what we're doing is forcing something. It's only forcing in the sense that we're going around the contract terms that would otherwise prevent bondholders from doing, or servicers from doing on behalf of bondholders, what is already in those bondholders' own interest.
Okay.
Again, and that's only true, of course, again, if we've chosen the right mortgage loans, and we believe that we have. That's the sort of cardinal point here, I guess.
Okay. Well, Robert, we have ended our third segment, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly. I learned a lot. This has been Robert Hockett. He's author of It Takes a Village and has to do with municipal condemnation of loans. And he's with Cornell Law School. I've really enjoyed our time together. And we had talked a little bit about coming out to California, maybe getting a chance to debate the issues in front of people. And I would thoroughly enjoy that. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks so much, Bruce. It's been a great pleasure.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.